everywhere, man. I cross the valleys fair, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Hey, Taylor, a little light came up. 40.
Yeah. Well, virtual high five, Dwayne. We are tech wizards.
If I try to do it to your screen, my hand goes off.
Yes, welcome to Barnstorming PA. Here we are. Two continents, two barnstormers.
Right. I've never felt so close to Sweden as I do right now.
Yes, it's so good. Do you have a... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so my name's Dwayne Heisler. I'm in central Pennsylvania, near Bloomsburg, Columbia County. And I'm a frequent guest on Barnstorming PA. So, and
returning
you are...
champion.
Returning champion. There we go. That works.
Yeah, my name is Taylor Lightman. I am a usual barnstormer, but right now I'm in Sweden. In grad school studying disaster risk management, which has a whole new level of pertinence. I was worried about getting a job after this before, but now I'm not as concerned. I haven't been on a barnstorming episode in a while, so I'm excited to be here, and I'm glad that we got the tech figured out. We're missing Jordy, sadly. I have been in quarantine for 8 days. Dwayne, what's your situation?
Well, I'm not showing any symptoms, and I haven't been around anyone that has been exposed, but I'm kind of treating this as if I have it as well. And I thought that wouldn't hurt. And so I've been in quarantine, I guess. When did I start my car last? Maybe 10 days. I guess it's been over a week. Yeah, about 10 days. I haven't been out of the house for 10. Well, that's not true. I do take my dogs for walks, but I have not been out of my home, out of here, and I live in the country for 10 days.
Do you have any highlights of the isolation that have been?
Well, I've been listening to a lot of news. Thankfully, my work with healthcare, it's SEIU, Service Employees International Union. Healthcare PA is the local, Pennsylvania. I'm able to work from at home, so I've really been diving into my work because you mentioned about being a champion for the podcast. Like right now, we have healthcare champions or first responders. I mean, I consider the people who work in grocery stores and the people who work in any kind of public, you know, necessity as being champions, and we really need to lift them up. In fact, if you go to my Facebook page, Dwayne Heisler, you can see I've used the frame saying I stand with healthcare champions, healthcare heroes is the framing of it, healthcare, literally the framing of it, healthcare heroes. And so I've been, in terms of what I've been doing, I normally like shop in bulk, so I didn't need to go out and do a run for toilet paper or anything like that. And I can kind of sustain myself. So the big takeaways for me over the last week is I'm not driving like I used to. I was always on the road and going to meetings and these personal meetings. And so I've been utilizing more of the technology like Zoom here, a little bit of an ad there maybe for Zoom or
maybe print platforms.
Right. Yeah. So for me, I found that I just have to discipline myself a little bit to take breaks because I find myself maybe waking up early in the morning hours or staying up really late and I am on Twitter or I am, you know, on Facebook or I am going through emails and the work is really endless in these times for the work that I'm doing, which tends to be kind of heavily working with progressive organizations and with our legislature, both on the federal level and on the state level. So that kind of work is endless. I do need to kind of create some space, which is great because I have dogs and I can go out and pick or something like that. So that's been, what about you? What has your experience been? Like I live in the country in a home, I have a stream in front of my house. Like, you know, so it's completely different from being in more of a metro area or even in a small town. I'm half an hour pretty much from the nearest real town.
Yeah. Well, my experience, so I had done some international travel like 2 weekends ago. And so I had quarantined myself just in case that I had gotten it. And I was really worried about it. I'm not so worried about it anymore. I think I've made it through the worst part of the window. If I were to have gotten it, I think I would have gotten it by now. But I live in a university town. It's about 60,000, and I live in basically the heart of it. It's been not that bad, honestly. I wouldn't have been able to do it without my girlfriend, and she's been really wonderful and supportive, and has been really. I wouldn't have been able to quarantine without her. So, you know, honestly, I think the highlight has just been catching up on my sleep. I think I had also been doing a pretty rigorous schedule right before this. And the first 2 or 3 days of the quarantine, I basically slept for like 12 hours a day. And so that was the highlight, kind of just resetting my sleep schedule. And I don't know, I think things will mostly be fine here. I think Sweden's got it under control. We have universal healthcare. So that is just, and sick leave and really responsive welfare state that I have a high amount of faith in. So, man, I hope, my great hope is that out of this, we get a lot more angry about the current state of healthcare in America.
So yesterday we did a teleseminar through the hub. We did a Zoom meeting actually talking about the shock doctrine, which is really kind of tapping into what you just said, Taylor, which, you know, in times of shock, which is what our world is going through right now, there's an opportunity there. And you can bet that there are folks who want to bring back, like if we're looking at a recession, which is probable, that will be dusting off the old trickle-down economics and all of those, like charter schools and like all of that stuff is like just waiting to be dusted off and thrown back at our political system. But this also provides a window or an opportunity to do the things that I think we really need to be doing. So why should we be throwing money at, like, for example, looking at just the environment? Why should we be throwing money, like supporting the old oil, dirty oil and coal companies, when we could actually be investing billions of dollars or $1 trillion into green, clean energies, right? Hmm. One of the things I've seen from this pandemic is a little bit of some cleaning up of our environment. You know, there's actually like, water in the canals of Venice. There's actually like satellite imagery of like cities in China that we could actually see the ground now, and there's no smog there. Like, so how can we invest in and use that money that we now all of a sudden have to support the dirty shit that we've been doing and actually invest that into clean stuff? And the same is true with healthcare, right? That we should have now the wherewithal and the opportunity to make sure that everyone in the United States of America has a basic level of healthcare, and they currently do not, right?
Yeah.
And opportunity to get the profit out of healthcare. We have an opportunity to make sure that we're doing things in a smart way when we reinvest into, you know, into our economy, into our healthcare, into our environment, into our education systems, all of those things. And so we have to be dusting off those things. So, dare I say it, we have an opportunity to actually do the Green New Deal.
Yeah, absolutely. It's no better time than right now. If we're going to... Also, I can't believe that we just freed up $1 trillion or $1.5 trillion. It's like, and people are busting Bernie Sanders' balls about, you know, a $30 billion Medicare for all price tag. It's just like,
right?
You know, as soon as the stock market started falling, they just freed up $1 trillion. Right. It just makes me so mad. I can't believe it. no discussion of power now, for it.
Like even today, there's a huge fight in our Senate that's going on. There's supposed to be another vote today, or maybe a few votes today, I don't know. But right now, you know, they're trying to push through, the Senate leadership is trying to push through this, you know, these packages that do not address the American people like it really should. Like, why the hell should we be investing in the airline industry so that they can just fucking lay off workers, right? And buy their own goddamn stock.
Yep,
that's
absolutely
absurd. It is obscene. And they're trying to pose it as if the Democrats are like holding up the package, right?
Yeah.
Seen, and that is happening across all kinds of sectors. So, for example, today I just got an email from Healthcare PA saying, "Hey, we want to make sure that that there's this. We want Senator Toomey, for example, one of our senators in the state of Pennsylvania, to be called to demand that they that senators take action to make sure that healthcare workers have the masks and protective equipment that they need to be on the front lines." So I actually have a number here, and I thought I would call while we're here, and you can hear like how this works and how easy it is. What do you think? Should I go for it?
Let's go for it.
All right. So let me turn my phone on, and I will dial the number and then put it on speaker. And so the number, if anyone wants to do this along with me, is 855. Five, and you can do this after the fact too. We're still going to need this. Like, I have no illusion that I'm going to make this call and then in a second everyone's going to have what they need. So whenever this gets aired, I'd like for you to pick up your phone and to dial with me 855-877-3929. That's 855-877-3929. That will put us in, well, let's hear. We'll hear what that does. So let me dial it. Let's see. 855-877-3929. And let me see if I can get that to go on speaker. Crank it up.
Thank you for calling SEIU Healthcare's Caregiver Protection Hotline. In a moment, you will be connected to your senator. Tell him that you have your personal protective equipment now. Safety for frontline workers and patients, not billions for corporations.
Accepting your call.
So now we're going to be connected to Senator Toomey's phone.
Thank you for calling the Washington, D.C. office of Senator Pat Toomey. In response to the threat that COVID-19 poses to public health, and out of an abundance of caution, our Washington, D.C. office is operating with limited staff. Please leave a message. If you are a Pennsylvanian in need of immediate assistance, please call the Allentown office at 610-434-1444. Also, please know that all 7 offices across Pennsylvania are currently open. To obtain phone numbers and locations, please visit our website at www.toomey.senate.gov. By selecting the contact tab, you will be able to email the office and also obtain additional phone numbers. Thank you for your call.
Senator Toomey, my name is Dwayne Heisler. I'm a constituent of yours. My zip code is 17820 in Catawissa, Pennsylvania. I'm calling because we need to make sure that our frontline healthcare workers have masks and the protective equipment that they need to stay on the front line. If they don't stay on the front line, none of us are safe, and this needs to be a priority in any bills that are passed by the Senate. My phone number is 570-317-6214, and I want to make sure that this gets done. We need to have the mask and protective equipment included, and we need your leadership in the Senate to make sure that that gets done. Thank you. So there.
Easy as that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that. So I would encourage other folks to just do the same thing. We already have actually Senator Casey making that demand. In fact, I got a copy of a letter just this morning that Senator Casey sent. Let me pull it up here. that, here it is, Matt, here now, that Senator Casey sent to Mitch McConnell, and also carbon copied Senator Chuck Schumer in the Senate, making the demands and making sure that workers are taken care of, that the money is spent on everyday frontline workers. And it's a kind of a two-page letter, so I'm not going to go into the whole thing, but it talks about really working with the American Working Family Relief Action, the Families First Corona Response Act, and the Paid Leave Act. And so he's making the demand in writing, the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Act. So there's a lot of good stuff. So Senator Casey is already pushing these things forward for the American people, and that's good news for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are sort of three things that I'd like to talk about, and two of them might kind of blend a little bit. One is I'd like to talk about, like, you know, leaning into this shock doctrine thing, that theme that we've been going at, where crises provide opportunities to rapidly change, social and political orders. You know, I want to talk about unique challenges and opportunities in Central Pennsylvania that COVID-19 poses. I also want to hear exactly what you guys are doing at SCIU to meet the challenge, and what you're doing with your work, Dwayne. And the last thing I'd like to do is play a little game. So is there anything that you'd like to do first?
You know, I'm intrigued by you saying you want to play a little game, so I'll just go with whatever. I'm curious what you'd like to do. So
for the game?
Excuse me?
For the game? You want to do the game? All right. Well, I actually I looked up some facts about the Spanish influenza, and I have a little true or false game for you here. If you want
play. That's good. Yeah, we can do that.
Or we could hear about your work first and say,
we could do the work. One thing that we're doing at SCIU is we're putting out kind of a daily call to action to keep our team, our staff, kind of organized on the type of work that we do. And I think that this might serve as a model for other organizations. So I wouldn't mind speaking to some of that and getting your input on it too.
Let's do the fun last. I want to hear about this first.
Okay, so our group is, SCIU Healthcare PA. We have just under 100 people on staff, 80 to 100 on staff. And most of it is like in facilities, nursing homes and healthcare providers, hospitals. We also, part of our union has like home healthcare too through the state of Pennsylvania. So it's all healthcare related. And so one of the things we did as a staff is we want to keep everyone safe, and we didn't want our staff going from facility to facility. So we're doing as much as we can to work at home. And so therefore we use tools like Zoom and other things like that. And so one of the things we're doing is we're doing a morning kind of call to action, which includes a COVID-19 update. And so, for example, on this morning's call, was an update from NEPA, which is shorthand for Northeast PA. After hearing from our NEPA's brothers and sisters, and I'm one of those, Senator Casey is pushing our issues and our agenda in the U.S. Senate, calling for protective healthcare equipment, childcare, testing, hazard pay, and other specifics. And we actually have a copy of the letter that we're supposed to distribute to our members that is sent to Mitch McConnell, which is what I was just speaking to. So that's like the first thing. And then there's a pop quiz, like, what is our union programming in this moment? And because there's so much, Taylor, there's so much going on right now. It's really challenging to make sure that we stay focused on the things that we need to do. And number one on that list for SEIU is to stem the spread of the virus, not only to ourselves, but to our patients, right? So it's to the union members, it's to our patients. So we have to keep that first and foremost. Number two, carry our demands to our employers, right? So for example, like locally, Taylor, as you know, like UPMC shut down the Sunbury Hospital in January, right?
Yeah.
Demand made to them, hey, maybe we should be opening up this hospital again. And they said, oh, we can't do it. Meanwhile, they have $4 billion in reserves as a nonprofit and the largest employer in the state of Pennsylvania. I think we should probably up that demand a little bit, right? So this is one example. Or we have employers who are actually locking up PPE and not, they're not giving them to like nurses and to like dietary people who go into rooms and pick up trays, or to technicians, or to like housekeeping. Like, they're not giving them the N95 mask until the tests come back to show that they're positive. That's right. There's a few employers that are doing shit like that. And so, like, keeping our frontline workers like safe, you know, in this war against the virus is something that is essential. So carrying our demands to the employer, but we shouldn't stop there. We also have to carry our demands to the government so that they can act. So it's very simple. What is the union program? Stop the spread of the virus, carry our demands to the employers, and carry and get the government to act. Those are our three things. So I'll just pause there. There's more to our call for action today, but I wanted to get your, what did you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm actually a former employee of SEIU Healthcare PA, so I think I think that the general public.
I forgot about that, Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that I learned from that experience that the general public might not know about healthcare in America is just the rot that for profit incentives have wreaked on our system. You know, we already have like very, very high, especially in Northeast PA, nurse to patient ratios. We're talking like 8-1, and I cannot imagine what the strain of this is doing on them. And these companies, like particularly like CHS, Community Healthcare Systems, and UPMC, just will not move an inch during a normal time. And I don't know exactly. Like, I think the union's probably doing a really good job. It sounds like they have their priorities very set very straight.
I have an example of that too, Taylor. So something that we did last week, like an action we did last week, we had a telephone call with the Secretary of Health, Rachel Levine, for the state of Pennsylvania, and we got a ton of healthcare workers on that. There were over 1,000 healthcare workers on that. Someone said thousands, so we might have even hit 2,000 on that. And yeah, this is statewide. So this includes like employees from every sector of healthcare that were on it. And so there were a lot of people on that call. And during that call, we asked them to move, like we said, is anyone ready to contact the state legislature in order to push this agenda? Because quite honestly, in Pennsylvania, our Republican state legislature, the leadership there is just not doing what they need to do. So we actually asked people to press on their phones during a call, one, if they were ready to give Mike Terzai a call on Friday. And this is a Thursday meeting. And we had like over 90% of the people on that call say yes. So in the starting like Friday morning, everyone was calling, talking about the American Working Family Relief Action, which has a whole section about expanding healthcare to make sure that everyone is fully paid for any COVID-19 related issues, for which includes sick time, furlough, self-quarantines, and providing care for infected family members, to make sure that there is free testing, because the rates for testing sometimes are all over the place, regardless of your healthcare insurance status or your language or your race or where you come from or your immigration status, that there shouldn't be any profits in this crisis, that we need to do, you know, this at cost. There's a whole list. So that's like under healthcare demands. There's also protecting frontline workers, which I kind of covered a little bit here, making sure that we have the proper equipment that we need, and other things, like making sure that we shut down the foot traffic to the public and to communities, and, you know, our nursing homes are protected and all of that. And then there's the economic relief portion of it, which about making sure that we double the length of the unemployment compensation benefits, that we make sure that and there's all kinds of entities around that, like food scarcity programs, and making sure that if employers are shutting down, that they're still paying their workers and making sure those protections are there. And then finally, the protection of our values and safety voices, which talks about making sure that that we have the resources necessary to protect our democracy, making sure that our census goes on, that we're counting everyone. And this, which I think is really important in Pennsylvania, that every registered voter gets a ballot with a return envelope with postage paid on it so that they can vote by, you know, which is the new Act 77.
I thought I had seen that they had delayed the primary. Is that a rumor or a truth?
It has not been announced yet, but it is pretty, it's going to be announced any day now that, in fact, I'm surprised it hasn't been announced yet. And maybe it has even while we've been on the phone. May 2nd is when they're looking at that. And that should probably be, it may have been already announced today. I got a heads up text message from our political team that it would be announced today.
Okay.
So yeah. So anyway,
May 2nd or June 2nd?
Oh.
I think it'd be June 2nd.
Maybe it is June 2nd. You're right. I have the text right here from our political team. No, June 2nd. June 2nd. And I think it's going to be postponed again. But anyway, June 2nd is the date. Yep, April 28th until June 2nd. I'm looking. And this is what the Inquirer printed too, because there was a leak somewhere. So,
June 2nd.
So, which is the same thing that Maryland did. They moved it to June 2nd, I believe. They moved theirs at the same time. So anyway, so all of these things, and there's a lot more, Taylor, but this is in our daily thing that what we're supposed to do is take this American Working Family Relief Act and like up it. So they made these calls to Terzai's office, and within a few hours, Terzai contacted our political director personally and said, make it stop. Talk with you about this because he's in shock. I'm bringing it back to the shock doctrine, right? We have a pandemic going on, and now all these frontline caregivers are calling his office and saying, get your shit together and introduce some legislation. Instead of holding back on this stuff, we need these things now. And now we have a personal line of communication that's open with the leader of the Republican House in the state of Pennsylvania.
That's fantastic. And what's the name of the Pennsylvania piece of legislation that you guys...
Well, it hasn't been introduced, so the official name has not been settled.
Okay, okay.
The American Working Family Relief Action is what it is. It's a terrible acronym, but it's American Family Relief Action, and it specifically talks. And this is signed on by 40 different organizations. It's unions, it's advocacy organizations, it's faith leaders, it's community members too that are working basically to serve millions of working Americans. That's what that all is. So there's an example of that happening. So in today's call to action, there was, hey, continue to lift this up and to look at it in terms of so that's the state version, the federal version, that if we're going to have a $1 trillion package, that it has to put families and healthcare workers first in that, and to continue working with the framing of our healthcare heroes. And then thing was just news from the state of Pennsylvania. We have three things on our call to action today. The second one is just updating everyone on what the Department of Health said today. And as of midnight last night, there was another 108 additional positive cases of COVID-19, which brings our statewide total up to 479, which is affecting 33 counties in the state of Pennsylvania. And then the third thing is training. We're having ongoing training on how to get our members involved with Zoom training and so that we can hold our meetings and continue to communicate. And so that's our daily call of action for SEIU Healthcare PA. So right?
Yeah, well, I hope that SEIU is also, this really underscores to me the need to have healthcare workers unionized. Because I imagine there's going to be very drastic differences between unionized workplaces and non-unionized workplaces when we're talking about healthcare outcomes of patients. So I hope that you guys also continue your work organizing new workplaces, even though I know that's probably very difficult, since you can't make you can't be there in person or anything like that.
No, that makes it much more challenging. But I have to say that on the call we had with Secretary of Health, Rachel Levine, we actually were able to invite some non-healthcare workers or non-union workers to that call. And that was where one of the cases came up where they were locking up the PTE in the administrative office. Providing it to the healthcare workers, and they were like, well, you need to take that to your union rep, and they're like, we don't have a union here. So then the question was like to our president at one point said, hey, we don't have a union in our workplace. How should we be doing this? And he gave some pretty straightforward advice. I'm not sure if it was him or Gabe it might have been Gabe that did it, that said, well, you need to collectively come together and take these concerns to
demands
the employer and let them know that this is not acceptable. We will not, work under these conditions. You need to get us protective gear. And what are you doing about it? Make the demand on the employer, right?
And yeah, I mean, and that's the essential aspect of solidarity unionism. You know, it's the union is workers coming together, democratically deciding a list of demands and working with their employer through negotiations and direct action to get that done. And, you know, being affiliated with SEIU Healthcare PA or PASNAP is, you get access to a lot of resources, but I guess you don't technically need to be represented by a union to come together and ask for demands, but it makes it a whole lot easier.
A lot easier. So Taylor, there's something else that's going on that I think might be of interest to listeners here. We've all heard about how we don't have the protective equipment that we need, which includes masks, specifically the N95 masks. And I know there's some talk about private industry really gearing up those resources in the U.S. to provide those. But it got so bad that early last week, the CDC actually said, in lieu of anything else, that healthcare providers should use scarves and handkerchiefs to tie around their faces.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, so this was actually issued by the CDC, which is, of course, scarves and handkerchiefs do very little. They do some to like stop virus, but it's really not meant for that. It's meant for a larger part, right? That's what an N95 mask is for. So when I saw that, Taylor, the first thing I thought is that we can certainly do better than scarves and handkerchiefs. And I saw like the progressive movement make a shit ton of pussy hats, right? They can sew hats on them. We can do better than that. And so I did a little bit of research looking at various materials and what can provide the most protection. But I was thinking maybe beyond healthcare providers, like let the healthcare providers get as many N95 masks as they can. But what about the people who work at grocery stores or people in the transportation industry or people that just have to go out and get something, during this time that we're in lockdown? Wouldn't everyone feel better if they had a mask? Now, I know that these non-N95, cloth masks that are like surgical masks, is kind of like that style of surgical mask, that is really more helpful if you already have the virus so that you don't spread it to others through your droplets. But I know I feel better, like if I wore one of those, if I were surrounded by people with those, then at least I knew that my chances down. And so there's a movement right now of people in Northeast PA and in Lehigh Valley, in fact, throughout the whole state, that are now sewing and making these masks. The challenge is distribution of those and also how they're using it. Now, this morning, I got a text message from someone in the Lehigh Valley that said they're setting up a network because nurses want to use the cloth masks over top of the N95 so that they can reuse the N95s a little bit more effectively.
Wow, that's a great idea.
I don't know what the science is behind that. So I don't want any liability for any of this, but I'm just like relating to you what's happening. And I don't know what that actually means or what it looks like. But the other thing is like, the nurses aren't allowed to wear their N95s home when they go home. How are they protecting their families? Like I've heard of cases, like I saw one on Twitter where a doctor has made the painful decision to move into his garage to protect his family and his kids because of the work that he's doing, right? Because he doesn't have the protective gear at home. So we can certainly do a hell of a lot better than tying a scarf or a handkerchief around us, right? And so as the CDC said, as a last resort, a scarf or a handkerchief, but maybe we can make some of our own mask if we follow the guidelines and try to. And there's some that are out there. In fact, there was a hospital in Indiana that put out a call for this, and people started sewing them, and now they put up on their website, we have plenty of these. Check with your local nursing homes or anyone else if they would have these as well. And there's different models of it where you can put different filtration into them.
That's fantastic.
Them, and you also have to use caution. There's a right way to put on a mask and to take one off. Like, the worst thing you can do is like follow like TV with like where they take the mask and they pull it down below their nose.
Oh my gosh, right?
Rubbed it across your face, or pull it down below your chin so you can eat your lunch. That's safe because you just taken whatever was on the outside of that mask and rubbed it all over your face, right?
Yeah. So
there are cautions. There are some that have taken like twist ties and put them up over the bridge of the nose so that they can be more form-fitting around the nose when you make them. So there's different ways to do this. All I'm saying is that things are going to get worse here. No one is predicting that it's going to get better yet. And I believe in a short period of time, within the next week or so, we're going to see our hospitals really filled up. And these masks that people are making might come in handy. So I have some faith in the U.S. government of being able to get their shit together, but I have more faith in the states doing that. You know, look, New York has done. New York is taking a huge lead. You know, they're actually testing people. Hashtag, you know, like if you look at our like Trump and that administration, he's like, test, don't tell. Right?
Yeah.
That's hashtag don't test, don't tell. That's Trump. Yeah. And hashtag healthy leadership. That's what we really need, right? Yeah.
I think it's also just important to remember that, like, you know, this crisis, like basically all crises, just really reveals the deep divisions and the inequalities in America. And like making a bunch of masks and testing and making more ventilators will do some to help mitigate this, but the underlying issues here of a really broken healthcare system that is oftentimes motivated by profit, you know, that has made a lot of people really unwilling to take sick days and fix underlying issues, you know, that might have given them some diabetes or other things, you know, like we have a very broken healthcare system that has really contributed to this crisis, and that won't be fixed in a week, but we can fix it going forward. The other thing that I'd like to say is we also have a really broken education system, and I think we're seeing this with people's real frustrating inability to differentiate between facts and opinions during this. A lot of people don't know how to read scientific articles or really try and differentiate between what is a fact and what is an opinion. And that's really exacerbating difficulties during a crisis where people need to be on information hygiene.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, that's absolutely right, Taylor, but it's broken in so many ways. Like, when's the last time that a business let a homeless person in to wash their hands?
Yeah.
They're supposed to wash them. Like, who's taking care of that? Like, you know, and a homeless person having COVID-19 affects all of us, right? How are we addressing those kind of issues? And they're not, you know, and so that is, it is a challenge, definitely.
Something else that I'd like to talk about that's more uniquely relevant to Central Pennsylvania and the shock doctrine around all of this is that something that I haven't heard talked about a whole lot is the oil war that has been started between OPEC, the oil producing companies, and Russia. And I think that this is, well, I don't think, smart people think that this is an attempt to really crush the American oil and natural gas industry while we're kind of reeling from other things, shock doctrine. And something that I think will be a unique challenge for Central Pennsylvania is I think that we are going to see natural gas and fracking wells close and a lot of those jobs disappear. And I'm scared about how those wells are shut down, who will be monitoring for contamination, pollution, that whole, you know, how will we, you know, a lot of our facilities are run on fracked gas, power plants and stuff like that. We have a looming energy crisis, basically.
Right.
An environmental crisis. And I like, I don't even, it's scary, you know?
Yeah. So actually, you know, we put some thought into that with, we have a think tank that's kind of worked beyond that, because this is also a way that Republicans have been like trying to divide the fight in Pennsylvania with pitting unions and working jobs against the environment. And this has been a something in their playbook for a long time. In fact, it was in Pennsylvania when Hillary Clinton made the statement about coal, right?
Yeah.
Which was point in that campaign. So rinse and repeat, you know, they do it again. And so part of what we talk about is how to talk about this, because as usual, they try to divide us and try to split us up and have us go against each other, you know, and basically they say we can't have good things, right? Because of that, because of this choice. And so I'd like to maybe read to you a framing of how to talk about this, because a lot of people are like, well, how do we talk about it? Especially at that time when you had like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren saying we were going to like stop all fracking immediately, right? What does that mean for all the jobs, right? So like, how would they use that? And Democrats are trying to take our jobs and, you know, this whole thing. And yeah. So this is thing that we really put some thought into about what makes the most sense. And so I believe that no matter where you come from or what you look like, it's just common sense to want like good jobs, clean air, and clean water. Like our area locally, we want safe and healthy communities where our children can stay and thrive. But there's a handful of corporations and their political allies that they pay for who really don't care about our local needs. Right? They divide us so that they can profit, right? But bringing clean energy together is how we provide good jobs and the clean environment that we need. So whether this transition is rapid or it takes longer, when we're part of the solution, no one is left behind.
Yeah. I think increasingly this fracking question is going to come up, and I think that's excellent framing, Dwayne. It's about no matter where you are or, you know, which zip code you come from, we all deserve access to clean air and water. And I think right. we're going to have to be advocating both the state's Department of Environment, I guess, DCNR? Which one does...
I think that that's right, you know, but I think one of the things is like, it really explains why they're doing it. Like they're doing it for profits. You know, yes, they're trying totally. To divide us based upon being able to have their hands in our pockets, right? Mm. And so this really kind of is a rejoiner to their narrative about jobs, like why they're doing it. They really could, you know what? They would prefer to send us all home and automate the whole damn thing, right? Because that means more profits for them, right? Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. So this isn't about that. It's about how they can divide us so they can continue to take advantage of our natural resources while polluting the environment so they can make money doing it, you know?
Well, and
it really explains that.
And my concern with this is that Russia and OPEC are flooding the market with oil to make right. it more, or to make it cheaper than natural gas, so that yep. eventually there won't be a demand for natural gas, but these people, you know, they're gonna have to shut down their wells basically because the market will vanish.
Which is another argument to double down and to
on renewable energy.
Renewable energy, right? Right. Yeah. No points to that. Like, I mean, how stupid do we need to be, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, we have the resources here to do it. You know, we can do this. And this is, you know, shock doctrine. It's the time to do it. You know, this is what happened out of the Depression, right? We got the New Deal, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was so much amazing. And then when you look at like the opposite side, when we had 9/11, right? What did we end up getting? The Patriot Act.
Yeah, Department of Homeland Security.
yep. All of that shit, right? Came to us because they took advantage of the shock and awe, right? In fact, Iraq, shock and awe was supposed to be about that. Like the Iraqi people were supposed to be so shocked and so in awe that we would be able to put military bases everywhere. We'd be able to turn everything into capitalism. American business would be, remember the oil was going to pay for the war, right?
Yeah.
That's what that was all about. Fail. Because people stood up, right?
Yeah. Another thing that another opportunity, I think, in central Pennsylvania that I'd really like to just really briefly talk about here, and then I think we should get to the game, is I think there's an opportunity for progressive activists in central Pennsylvania at this point, because I think that we may adapt better to this new organizing challenge, which is doing it remotely, doing it digitally. And I think that if we can stay together and sort of meet this challenge as progressive activists, we can try and get a lot of these things done. You know, and I think the story with SEIU and calling Representative Terzai's office, or Senator Terzai's office, is just a fantastic story of that. You know, you guys leveraged your technology, you stood together and won the day. And so, like, I think the same could be true here as for progressive activists, who I think, you know, we've already been doing a lot remotely, and, you know, we're getting Zoom up, and I think it's an opportunity for us to, like, really effectively push for these things and dominate the narrative.
Yeah, I think that that's true. And one of the things that will come out of this new world, I mean, we are entering a new world. Are we witnessing like the end of the handshake as we know it? Like, I know I can never hit the doorknob the same way, right? And my birthday was on Wednesday, and quite honestly, like, I don't know if I could sing happy birthday just once and not think about it, right? Like, this is a dramatic change in our society, and we don't quite grasp what that really means to us. Like, you know, mommy, even back then they used to shake each other's hands. Like, this is a new, Taylor, you and I, and I'm going to be 56 years old.
Happy birthday, Dwayne.
Thank you. We have never lived through a war. Like, there's been plenty of wars and our troops have been on the lines, but not a war where we've had to sacrifice, like in a world war where we were fighting for our lives. And we've been told to go out and shop, right? You know, like, this is not... You know, we have not been through that. This is our moment for that. This is our challenge right now. This is what's in front of us. And so, you know, I agree with you. I think we have the capacity to embrace this and to create it in such a way that that puts our values front and center, especially in rural communities and going back to healthcare, because we are so lacking in healthcare in rural communities in terms of access and affordability. And we can't let this moment slip by us. We need to organize. We need to embrace the technology that will enable us to do these things. We can move forward in this moment. And here's the challenge for everyone. You know, like, if you look at the conservatives, like, they have these think tanks, they have bought media, you know, they have like Fox, you know, with, you know, and all of this.
OAN.
And we rely, yeah, and we, and Sinclair, like, and we rely on the regular news to report things, right? Which is, of course, Donald Trump's platform, right? Because when he sneezes, we have to report it, right? So he's like the narrator in chief, right? For our country through our... So we need our own channels. And if each one of us used our own networks of emails and Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and our own social media networks, and we were pumping this stuff out, then that means people would hear it over and over again. And here's the thing. People who hear things over and over again and are at the point where they will repeat it, then say it's common sense.
Yeah.
These are the anchors. It's not like they're more conservative or they're less conservative or it's some kind of ideologue. It's what they hear over and over again. That's what fills in the blanks. And if they're hearing the message, which is the values that we have, as progressives over and over again, rinse and repeat. So our job isn't just to deliver the message, it's to deliver it in such a way that they repeat it over and over again through their networks, then we're really developing what we need for the people, for what people need in order to move society forward in a positive way and get the fucking greed and the corporate shit out of it.
Yeah. So shall we move to the game?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. So
I hope I do well. We'll see.
All right. So we're talking about the last major pandemic, which is the 1918 influenza.
Spanish flu.
The Spanish flu. So true or false, it's called the Spanish flu because Spain was hit hardest.
Well, from what I know, it was the second round of the Spanish flu that really hit hard. But I don't know why it was called the Spanish flu. Troops were coming back from the war, but it wasn't the Spanish-American War, of course. But I'm not really sure. I would say false.
It is false. So actually, initially during it, it was during World War One. A lot of the American and British and French and German governments were suppressing information about the flu. Spain was neutral, and so a lot of the news, it just appeared that it was really bad out of Spain because they were not suppressing information.
I got one right. Yay. Yes. I'll take my moment to retire from this game.
Yeah. American Samoa, I think it was just called Samoa back then, before we, invaded it, lost 22% of their population. Iran lost between 8 and 22% of their population.
Oh, jeez.
And the president of Brazil died. So, crazy.
Yeah.
So, you mentioned the waves. So, the influenza hit hardest during the winter months. True or false?
Oh, I don't know what time, what season. I know it was on the second wave that it hit higher, but I don't know when that happened. I'm going to say that it's true.
It is true. Yeah, you're 2 for 2 so far. There were 3 separate waves. The first wave was actually during the summer, during July. And then it peaked around November of 1918. And at that period of time, there were 25 out of every 1,000 people died, which is crazy.
Right.
Next question. All right. I'm rooting for you here, Dwayne. The 1918 influenza hit hardest because it was an especially bad virus. True or false?
Oh, I don't know what you mean by especially bad virus. I think that it was more of maybe how we reacted to it or failed to react to it. Like I think about what happened in Philadelphia versus like in St. Louis, where in Philadelphia, they didn't really try to mitigate when all the soldiers were coming back, which was kind of a decision almost by the U.S. government to kind of downplay those returning troops and all of that, where St. Louis took time to mitigate it and then they flattened the curve. So I would say maybe not because it was, what was the framing of what the virus was, a bad virus?
Or an especially bad virus.
An especially bad
deadly virus.
I guess like in some terms, it was especially bad because a lot of people died from it, but I think it was more our reaction to it. So I'm going to say false.
That's from my research. You are correct. Ding, ding, ding. It's a little disputed. Some people, it was especially bad for like healthy people, oddly, because it.
Younger people too, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like people my age were the ones that were dying the most because it basically set their immune system on fire or something like that.
Right.
Old people.
I knew more about this than I thought I did.
You actually know quite a bit about this. I'm kind of surprised.
Old as dirt, you know, that's why.
Well, during it, actually old people also had an immunity from the 1890 Russian flu. So they were not really affected. And then there's a whole line of thinking, hypothesis, that this was actually a pretty mediocre virus, and it was just the poor reaction. That this is what you said: malnourishment, overwhelming of medical camps, poverty,
right,
poor responses. Right. That, yeah. The last question I have, and some people postulate that aspirin poisoning is to blame for the high death rate.
Aspirin poisoning?
Aspirin poisoning.
Well, that's really interesting, because in our current pandemic, there's concern about ibuprofen versus Tylenol, basically. That's what we call it here in the States, Tylenol. And that we're supposed to stay away from ibuprofen, but Tylenol is okay. So aspirin poisoning, that's really interesting. I've never really heard of the term aspirin poisoning before. And I'm really not sure of this. Like, I wouldn't be surprised, because that would, I mean, we think about medications that they had back then, and they're not as expansive as we have now. But aspirin, of course, has been around for centuries, right?
Yeah.
Willow bark. I don't know, like, aspirin would be like eating at your stomach and giving you like ulcers and stick. I've never heard of aspirin poisoning. Trick question.
Don't overthink it.
Okay. I just say no. That's
okay.
False.
It is. True. Some people think that it is actually to blame for some of the deaths.
Okay.
Because, true. I mean, we don't know if it's true or not. But this is what some people are okay. thinking, because at the time Bayer's patent on aspirin ran out and just happened to do this at the,
it coincided.
And so companies absolutely flooded the market with aspirin. And so doctors at the time were prescribing, I think, up to like 31 grams of aspirin per day, which is a huge amount of aspirin. And at that level, you start to hyperventilate if you get that much aspirin. So
there is such a thing as aspirin poisoning. I've never heard of that. I have to look that up. Cool.
Yeah. This is what Wikipedia says. Some people think that the high death rates can partially be attributed to aspirin poisoning.
Wow. Okay. Learn something.
Yeah. All right.
Well, Taylor, thank you for doing all that research. That was pretty cool. I didn't know
about
things, and it's so good to connect with you. I have to say that I have another call that I need to get on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because we kind of got a late start here, but I want to thank you for Jordy here and kind of like taking the reins on this. We'll have to catch up with him now.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much, Dwayne. I'll catch you later.
Okay, have a good one.
Bye.